Hey, it's Chaz and AJ.
Hello.
Thank you for listening to our podcast.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoy it. And please subscribe, comment, share, do all those things that make us look good.
And be nice.
Thank you. Attorney General William Tong on the show. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
I got one thing to say, though.
Uh-oh.
I've got an 80s event for my kid's school.
Ooh, fun.
Where you have to wear 80s gear. And guess what I have in my drawer? I have a Pyromania t-shirt.
Nice.
That I can whip out.
Nice.
Look at you. For this 80s event that I didn't have 6 months ago.
Oh, spike your awesome. Hair up. You're all good.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Painted purple.
Thank you.
Yep. Clip on feather earring.
He's yeah. And Kenny leg warmers.
Kids are going to be like, what's
you won't see me in leg warmers, Ashley. No.
Yeah, no. Isn't that flash dance?
Worth a try.
No flash dance. No
he's
shower.
He's a maniac. Maniac. I would love that.
Shower scene.
The attorney general in a head with a headband.
Physical.
Right. Now we're just talking crazy.
Yeah, no, right. Yeah.
Some of those Madonna gloves with the cutoff fingers.
Right.
Yes.
Or their wedding dress. Like
or Michael Jackson would be good. I can picture you in loafers with high waters and white socks.
But there's going to be a million
of
them.
I told you that was my big regret, right? That I didn't get to go see Michael Jackson and Duran Duran at the Harvard Civic Center when I was a kid.
Wow. That's nuts.
Damn.
Yeah.
So this
so 80s, gas prices.
That, well, the,
he's like, he goes, I got to get out of this.
The 80s things, are the kids dressing up as well?
No, it's a parents thing. It's a benefit.
Oh.
So
so the parents dress up and the kids don't.
Yeah, gotcha. Right.
That makes sense.
Exactly.
This is called take a picture of your parents and use it against them.
Mm. The gas thing, the prices are nuts.
Yeah.
And how can we tell if a gas station is price gouging or not? It seems like they all are.
Yeah.
Well, you can't tell, and that's why you need the attorney general to step in and investigate. So
cool.
when prices shoot up, the law says that the commissioner of the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection and the attorney general shall declare what's known as an abnormal market disruption, which is a fancy way of saying we have an emergency. And so I've declared an abnormal market disruption, which then triggers new authority for me to take action against price gougers. And importantly, not just against the immediate retailer, but also up the chain, right, to the supplier, the distributor, the wholesaler. Because very often, you know, the retailer or service station is a neighbor, right? Someone in our community runs a small business, and they're getting charged a high price by their supplier or distributor. And so that's where the price gouging may be, further up the chain.
Aha.
Oh.
Okay,
so
makes sense.
How busy are you now with this one? This is
we're really busy.
We're sneakers.
And people should call the Department of Consumer Protection or me, 860-808-5000 or attorney.general@ct.gov. We look at every single complaint. We run it down. We investigate. And keep in mind that not every price increase is price gouging, right? It has to meet a legal standard. It's got to be unconscionable. And there's a lot going on in this world. I don't have to tell anybody listening. And what's happening in Ukraine and Russia and the supply chain broadly is having an impact on prices, not just on gas, but on everything.
What should a gallon of 87 octane be right now? Because you see, like, there's like four different prices on the same grade of gasoline.
Well, we have boutique pricing here in Connecticut.
But I mean, on the same street. On the same street, I see the 419, 429, 439, all for 87 octane.
Yeah, it's hard for me to say on the fly what it should or should not be. What it shouldn't be is something so out of whack with normal prices you should be able to explain it if you're the service station owner or the retailer. And when my investigator shows up and says, show me your invoices and show me your price history, you should be able to produce that information and prove to us what's going on,
wow.
Right? And then we'll make an evaluation as to whether, you know, there's a basis for your price or if you're price gouging.
Wow. Hmm. So you want people to just call your office or email your office if they see really high gas prices,
really high gas prices,
figure it
but
out.
But you know, people should obviously use their judgment, right? We're investigating a whole lot of things.
What's real high? Like, what? Let's give us, like, is there a bar?
Let's keep an eye out for?
Yeah, you know, what I ask people to do is, if you're in, so I live in Stamford, right? And my service stations are on High Ridge Road. And so if I've seen it jump over the past few weeks in a short period of time by 15, 20, 30% or more, you know, as it gets higher in that percentage jump, that's when I start to think there's something going on, right? If it's gone up a few cents, you know, people can call me for whatever they want, but I would recommend that if it's gone up a few cents, even though that's painful, and it's normal in this market, right? Or could be normal. It's only if you see something really severe that it's likely something else is going on, or could be something else is going on, and then we'll run it down.
But what if they changed like four times in one day? I saw that happen like Sunday.
Yeah, again, hard for me to know exactly what's happening with that one service station owner. But, of course, wild fluctuations on one day or within a span of a few days can also be problematic.
Okay. So I'm trying to figure out, so we don't have everybody listening right now, reach out to you. Yeah.
Goddamn phones!
Yeah.
And then
people
you.
With
so,
real
so
emergencies
my
can't
ask get through. To the good listeners of Chaz and AJ is, again, use your judgment. If the price has gone up, it's going up for everybody. Understand that. What we're looking for is instances where, so for example, AJ, you said on a street, right? You have four or five service stations.
Yep.
If somebody's obviously out of whack or out of step, right, with the others, that's a good sign that you should call us. Or, again, if it's been a dramatic increase over the past couple of weeks, you should call us.
Okay.
Every gas station falls under that last part.
Yeah.
In dramatic increase over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, because this one station is like 30 cents over everybody else.
No, I hear you. This is really hard. This is really hard for everybody, but it's hard for law enforcement to parse it and to make judgments about it on the fly without digging into it, right? And we have an obligation. Again, I'm really sensitive to the small business owners too that run these service stations. They live in our community and they're trying to run a business too. And so I have to give them an opportunity to explain, but I make it clear it is never okay, and it's illegal right now to price gouge and take advantage of people on the price of gasoline. I have enhanced penalties and an authority to sanction people if they price gouge.
If your people arrive at a gas station and the gas station can show that they're paying, you know, whatever the margin is over what they're being charged, that's where it ends? Or then
I make a phone call to the supplier or distributor and wholesaler.
Right.
And I say, hey guys, what's going on? Why are you charging our guys in Meriden, you know, 50 cents more all of a sudden?
I just bought a Porsche.
I got to fill it up, right?
There is this boutique pricing. I don't know if this is something years ago and it's changed and I'm not aware that it's changed. But there used to be this where in Fairfield County, the gas is higher than it is in like New Haven County. Is that still at play? And is that something you can work against?
So it's called zone pricing.
Zone.
Yeah. I believe it's still at play. It is actually when I was in the legislature, because I represent Stamford, when I was in the legislature, it's something that then Attorney General Blumenthal and I worked on. I believe it is still in play. I think what's happened is that some players in the industry have been able to bob and weave, frankly, and change the terminology and change around how they do this pricing. But I do think that certain communities pay more for gas because they are certain communities.
I got one here for you, Attorney General Tong, that, you know, anytime a crisis happens, a lot of good people step forward to help, but then there are the others
that
see it as an opportunity.
Uh-huh.
This Ukraine war victim situation, there are a lot of people collecting money, a lot of good people collecting money and items, but there are going to be those people who are not that good.
Yeah, the scammers.
Got their hands out, going right in their pocket.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. How did we... How do we know we're donating to a legitimate organization?
So not only is the Attorney General responsible for consumer protection, but I'm also responsible for the state's charitable giving laws. So that's that. I come in two ways. And basically, in this day and age, it's really easy for scammers to target you and take advantage of you. So in the old days, you might get a phone call, right, on a landline and pick up the phone, and someone says, I'm calling from the Red Cross or such and such fund. Can you give me $20, right? And you would do it maybe 20 years ago. But now I would recommend that you not give any money over the phone by a phone solicitation, that you not give any money through an email or text solicitation. And if you want to give to Ukraine-related relief efforts or any other charity, you should make a fresh phone call yourself to whatever charity you want. And if you get a call and you've never heard of this charity before, but you're intrigued, stop, hang up the phone, you know, use the Google machine, figure out who they are, where they're based,
do a little work.
Yeah, do a little research, and then you can call and give them money if you want to. When you're satisfied, they're okay. You can also look them up. The Department of Consumer Protection has a listing of charities that are permitted to solicit in Connecticut. You actually have to register before you can solicit. And so check if they're registered.
Here's another one, Attorney General. Did you see that Netflix thing, Tinder Swindler?
Yeah. And it makes people sort of blush and chuckle, right, to hear about romance scams. Frankly, this scumbag, right?
Right.
Who scams people and cons people. But it's actually very sad.
I'm sorry, did the Attorney General just say scumbag?
Yeah, I did say scumbag.
It was awesome.
Is that allowed?
Yeah, sure.
Did everybody see it? I could tell by AJ's face he hasn't. Ashley?
I fist pumped.
I have not.
No?
I've seen the guy. I've seen articles about him. I haven't watched the show.
Okay. Yeah. It's,
that's what he is, isn't it? I mean,
he's a con artist.
Yeah.
He's a scumbag.
Yes. No, but he claimed that he was the son of this big diamond guy.
Okay.
And he said he was a billionaire, and he tricked all these women into giving him money.
Oh, wow.
And he's just had all these women working and giving him money.
Oh.
As I'm watching this, I said, I know what's going to happen to this guy next. He's going to get his own show, and he's going to get his own show.
He will. Yeah.
But unfortunately, lower level, actually not always lower level, but guys like that, it's not always guys, operate like that in Connecticut. And we had a woman call our office. She got taken for $100,000.
Wow.
And so on that, you know, understand that people are prowling the internet looking for marks, right, for targets. And what they do is they see if you're single, you're on a dating app, or maybe on Facebook, you've lost a spouse, you just broke up, something happened to you. They target you, and it's really easy through the internet, through social media, text message, phone, email, to target you. It's almost free, right, for someone to do that from abroad. You don't have to pay long distance anymore, right? And if you're vulnerable, they'll really sink their teeth into you. And then it's that high pressure moment when you've been talking to somebody for a year, right, over email or something, or social media, even by Zoom, and they say, I'm going to come see you. And I bought a plane ticket. And then, lo and behold, hours before this person's supposed to get on the plane, they say, oh, my God, something happened to my mom or dad or my business, and I need you to wire me $10,000, and if I can just take care of this, then I can get on the plane and see you.
Oops.
Yeah.
So don't fall for those high-pressure cons.
It's funny. Right? We were watching the show, Jennifer and I, together, and you see this happening to these women. You're like, don't do it, girl! But they're emotionally tied into it. This guy was
charged.
He was good. He was good.
Yeah. You're good, you. You're good.
And I mean good at being bad.
Right. But, scumbag. Yeah. Yes. Right.
All right, we're going to roll. But I have a lot of calls coming in for you. You know, Joe in Southbury has something. There was a gas station call. There's bunch of other calls, so we got to get you in here. We got to do a regular segment with you.
Yeah,
happy to look forward to it.
All right, Attorney General Twine, thank you. Thieves broke into a truck and stole human remains meant for medical research, including severed heads.
What are you going to do with them, really?
How do you sell them?
I'm really, like, really lonely. Seems... Put them in the house. Hey, how you doing, Bill?
Yeah. All that work for nothing.
Exactly. Bowling balls.
Like Halloween.
Right.
Got Halloween coming up. Wow, those heads look real.
Yeah.
Exactly. Thank you.
Yes.
Don't
they
ask for a
real,
them.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, freezer, though, for the rest of the year. All right, defrost the heads. It's Halloween.
Even a fake human head creeps me out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It should.
It should be on a body. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah.
No, you shouldn't feel too comfortable.
No, a fake one.
Yeah.
Like a fake one scares me.
Like mannequins.
Yes, that's good.
Yeah. Like, why are you still smiling? You have no body.
Do we have this clip from Isaac Fields? He's a member of the community talking about the crime.
My wife actually does PhD research at the University of Colorado Anschutz. Cadavers are definitely utilized in certain situations, and I'm assuming that was probably the case.
Yeah, maybe they were looking for something else to be in there.
The surprise that must have been on their face when they found something they weren't expecting.
Wait, what was the voice in the middle of...
That was his wife.
Isaac Fields.
That was the wife.
Oh, I thought it was like a head.
Right? Maybe
like
it was.
A random head.
Maybe it was.
Wait a minute.
I don't know. He wasn't one of the heads.
He just like sewed it onto his shoulder.
Right, yeah.
No, he's just carrying it.
Oh, yeah. Trying to get a head. Yep. Two heads better than one.
Do you think they knew they were stealing heads?
No way.
Hey, let's grab this stuff. They get home. They open a box. What do we get?
Right.
How could it possibly be valuable?
Yeah, you
there's
open,
no way.
You open the box and you see the head looking at you. Like, whoa!
It's like stealing a very famous diamond. I mean, where are you going to go?
Yeah, everybody knows. Pawn it. You can't pawn it.
The whole world's looking for it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What do you do with it then?
What do you use? What do you use it for?
Put your hats.
All
wigs.
Right.
Wigs. Do you have a wig?
Okay.
You know, give it a style from
hats and wigs.
Hats and wigs.
A wig
right.
holder.
Right, right. Your sunglasses. There you go.
Stick them onto the post of like your 4-post bed.
Or if the kids are bored, like a Mr. Potato Head, you know, draw a face on this head. You know,
okay.
Like that. Yeah. If you tie like waking up and the kids put makeup on you when you're asleep, you know, you can just put this head out there and that'll take care of the kids as a diversion. You can now nap. Fall long and hard on that one.
Wouldn't that be a pain in the ass if heads can operate without the body?
It would be a pain in the neck.
It would be. Well, they have to have a handle first of all, someone to carry them around.
Yeah, you'd need like something sewed onto your head.
Right. And then how do you poop?
Just walking down the street and you hear something yelling at you from the bush. Hey!
Right.
Get over here. Pick me up.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're not my boss.
Just drop kick in the next yard. Hey, it's good.
Though on the plus side, you only need a single roller skate to get around.
This
so.
Is true, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But someone's got to give a push.
How would you put that roller skate on, though? You would need help all the time.
The chin strap.
Yeah, but still, you have no hands.
You have no hands.
Someone's
got to
tie it for
Someone's
you.
Someone's got to put it on.
Yeah, you're going to need someone. So you got to be nice to at least one
you
person.
You have to be nice.
Yeah, one person.
You have to be nice all the time.
This is true, yeah. Because they can just roll into traffic. Well, you know.
Do you need food?
I don't think so. There's no stomach. So.
Yeah, but how do you keep your jaw moving? You know, you need power. You need energy to keep your jaw moving.
Gum.
Gum.
Well, you don't swallow gum, guess so you don't need a stomach. You have a mouth.
Guess whose head we wouldn't need.
All right,
you don't need that one.
Here's another stolen item.
Okay,
thieves in Ireland stole radioactive material and could get cancer.
Oops,
karma.
Easy to find them. They're glowing.
Right. That's what I was thinking, too.
Just turn the lights off. There they are.
If the green guys over there.
Right. If someone's missing gobs of hair, like, oh, yeah, it could be them.
Right. They're going to scratch here. It comes off. Wait a minute. They're going to punch in the face. They're all fifth grade. Good heavens, man. You're crumbling.
Yeah, so a couple of guys stole some stuff from the back of a van last week. It's unclear if they knew what they were taking, but officials say they're trying to warn the thieves to be very careful. One of the items stolen was a bright yellow case with a radiation symbol on it. That should be your first sign.
Yeah, seriously, yeah. That was your don't touch this.
Reportedly, it's a device to measure the density of certain materials, and in this case, it was being used for road construction.
We found
if
three
you
dense
open
people.
The case without knowing what you're doing, you're releasing radioactive material.
Radioactive. The firm took it.
That happened to me at a museum with a rock It was in a big steel suitcase.
This explains a lot.
It really does. It really does.
This explains your gum answer.
It was a huge scare. We had to get, like, poison control and professionals involved.
They said, Ashley, you keep an eye on this. We're right back.
Scholars.
How did the rock end up with you?
Yeah.
It was a natural history museum, so they had a large rock collection. We wanted to look at one particular rock. We took it out, unwrapped it from the stainless steel suitcase. We were sort of.
Why would you do that?
Because we were in a museum and looking at objects and making an exhibit and planning and museum stuff.
But no one told you don't unwrap this rock?
No.
There was nothing written on there like, don't be an idiot and unwrap this rock?
I was with it didn't have a skull or bones on it. I was with an employee.
In her defense, who would bring a radioactive rock to a museum?
Right.
Well, I guess they figured nobody's stupid enough to unwrap it.
Yeah.
You just say it's a radioactive rock. Don't touch this. Keep it in a sealed case.
Something about radioactivity has like a half-life of this, and then if you touch it within this many years, you're like going to die.
Did you touch it?
Well, we had those little white gloves on, but somebody said we're fine.
Gloves to protect you or the item from dust.
Yeah.
Yes. It's
to protect you from the oil on your fingers. It's to protect the art from the oil on your fingers.
Right.
That's what you had. Oh, okay. You should be fine.
Right. Yeah. Okay, great. I'm not that green yet, so we're good to go.
Yeah, when bangs break off.
Father Ivan Masaryk, pastor of Holy Protection of Blessed Virgin Mary Ukrainian Catholic Church in Bridgeport. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Are you from the Ukraine?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I came to the United States in 1994.
What brought you here?
Well, there was a need of Ukrainian Catholic priests in the Ukrainian Catholic Diocese of Stamford, and actually in our archdiocese in the United States. So as graduates of the seminary in Ukraine, we were invited by bishops. Specifically, I was invited by Bishop, Ukrainian Catholic Bishop of Stamford, to come over and serve the Ukrainian community here in New England and New York State.
Nice.
Yeah.
How bad is it over there now? I mean, we see what we see on the news. What's it really like? Is there a difference from what we're seeing and what you're hearing?
Well, what we see in the news probably doubles or triples because we do not experience what people on the ground there experience. I have family in Western Ukraine mostly. They are safe for now. They are trying to help refugees and those who are displaced from Eastern and Central Ukraine to Western Ukraine, and as well as they're moving towards the Poland and other Western countries. But I've had some friends, priests, who serve in Kyiv and in the area. So some of them remain there. Some move their families to Lviv. Head of our church, Patriarch Svetoslav, remains in Kyiv, and he prays for all of us. So it's a very dangerous situation.
How frustrating is it for you? I know when I watch a video online of maybe a fight in a classroom or in a mall, and it just keeps going on, and somebody's being brutally beaten, and I watch people just filming it, not doing anything. Mm-hmm. I say to myself, how are you just watching this happen? How frustrating is it for you to watch this happen on such a huge scale?
What's frustrating to me is that Putin and his regime, you know, lies to the world. You know, he blames Ukraine on instigating war or causing, you know, this this conflict that he calls this. Actually, he calls this special operation, which is not. It's invasion of another country.
Right. Mm.
Ukraine have been independent for 31 years since the fall of the Soviet Union. And this is a sovereign country, so coming in with whatever intention you might have, still you're breaking the international law. And as you notice from this video, so he is not welcomed in Ukraine, neither his soldiers.
No.
Nope. No.
No, you know, what's interesting is that I think everyone thought that Ukraine would collapse quickly, and they are putting out one heck of a fight.
Well, because we have been fighting for our independence for centuries, on and off. So, and this is, it's in our hearts. It's right in our hearts, you know, to be free. And there is no way that Ukraine will be conquered. But another thing is frustrating, the Western world, I understand that they, you know, we have support, moral support, we have political support. But as you know, in the war, the military equipment is needed, and Ukrainian president and we, you know, call from, you know, to Western world, to NATO and other countries to close the sky and you know, help us, you know, to prevent, you know, the shelling and bombing of Ukrainian, not just the cities, but people who are not part of the army. So that's frustrating because we need that kind of help.
Have you been in contact with anyone over there recently?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
And are they in the war-torn area?
Some of them, yes. Some of them are in Kiev and other places they don't disclose because if they're part of the military operation.
How are they holding up? How are their spirits?
The spirit is how do I say that? A spirit of warrior. You know, they fight for their own country. So they're saving lives of innocent people. They're fighting for the freedom and independence of our own country. So morale is good.
Are there volunteers from other countries coming over to sign up to help your military fight?
I am not aware of that, but I know a lot of there is. I read someplace that there is over 4,000 people that returned to Ukraine from Europe and all over the world to their homeland to fight for Ukraine and Ukrainian people. I know here. As a matter of fact, one person from my parish, he is returning home next Sunday, and there was someone else, friends of my parishioners, who just went back a few days ago to Ukraine to join the military.
How can we help?
There are various websites that people make donations, financial donations, which go through proper channels, legit channels to help Ukraine. Our Ukrainian Archdiocese of Philadelphia on their website have a PayPal system to collect donations, which go for as a humanitarian help to Ukraine. On the local level, we accept donations of first aid medical supplies and like medicine type of Tylenol, Advil, ibuprofen, baby diapers, baby food, maybe even, you know, some like toiletries and stuff so we can ship them over to Ukraine through some of the shipping companies that have connections with Ukraine, like Mist and Nova Poshta.
And you're bringing those supplies right to the
To the church. This week we'll collect them this Saturday, March 12th, between 1 and 4 o'clock in the afternoon at our church, which is 457 Noble Avenue in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Right. And then we sort them out and we'll take it to New Jersey where the warehouses of these shipping companies are.
How fast do you think this stuff will be out? And on the border of Poland.
Actually, I cannot confirm that. I know I've been in contact last week, and they've collected their warehouses in New Jersey were full, so they asked us not to halt a little bit deliveries for a while so they can ship over. I know at least once or twice a week there is a plane going to Warsaw, and then from Warsaw they are trying to track it, you know, to Lviv, Western Ukraine, then from Western Ukraine. Volunteers are coming to Lviv to pick it up and deliver it to various places, trying even to reach out to the war zone area.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I made a
donation. But people on the ground in Ukraine, I listen and I watch the videos on YouTube, on, through Facebook. Even people on the ground in Ukraine helping each other enormously. You know, there is a great support and there is a enormous show of support among each other. They help just one another with food and shelters and stuff. So it's amazing how much goodness there is. You know, there is in humanity. So.
I wish we were doing more.
Yeah,
you know?
I know.
Really, it's really tough to watch.
Yeah, you want to help.
It's tough to watch that the whole world is just sitting back watching this happen.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's the fear is that this is going to expand, you know, into Europe. Maybe not like tomorrow or in a month, but the danger is imminent if the Putin is not stopped. Remember what happened in the World War II.
Yep.
At the beginning, you asked me why I came to the United States. Well, we have immigrants from Ukraine that came after World War II, and they settled in Bridgeport here. They started their parish in 1950, and they were those who were displaced from their homeland, Ukraine, to Europe, and then from Europe, you know, they were accepted as immigrants to England, to France, and to United States, to Canada, and other countries. So, and this seems like it's happening all over again.
Yeah, scary,
but really we're doing the same thing.
Yep.
We're just watching it.
Again, yeah.
Because we're afraid that this guy will actually use a nuclear weapon.
Yep.
So we're like, yeah, we better not get involved.
I'm aware of that, too, but I understand our military capabilities are strong, too, and Putin knows that as well. So I don't know. Can't say what his actions might be, but, you know, the guy understands only force. You know, he is not obliged by any rules. He breaks all the rules, international rules, local, you know, rules. He oppressed his people, you know, no matter what he says about his country. You know, the people even who go out on the streets to protest this war in Russia, they are being jailed right away. There's the news says there's at least 6,000 arrests have been made since the war began. And he already passed the law 2 days or 3 days ago through his parliament, Duma, that if anyone calls this his action in Ukraine as invasion, they'll be jailed for 15 years.
Wow.
This is like Soviet Union back again in action.
Yep.
You know, and remember what Reagan said, you know, started the war against, you know, against the Soviet, he didn't start the war, he wanted to bring this regime down because it's evil. It's evil in its essence because, first of all, it lies to the world, lies to its own people, it oppresses its own people, and then express the same politic and the same actions through the world. And, you know, even evil can be only stopped by doing great things, good, and bringing light into the world, telling the truth, and taking the proper steps. That's my opinion as a priest and as a human being, and as also as a Ukrainian by birth. Although I'm Ukrainian, I'm an American citizen now, but still, you know, in my heart, I will be always Ukrainian.
Always, yeah. Well, we feel helpless watching all this happen. We can't tell our government what to do and who should get involved and how this should be resolved. But we can help by donating items and money to those innocent families who are now displaced. They left everything behind. They're on the border of a country with no food, nothing.
Mm-hmm. They need help.
So we're going to link up on our radio station website here, and you can make cash donations. You can make donations of first aid, medical supplies, non-prescription medicine like Tylenol, Advil, baby food formula, baby wipes, baby diapers. There's a whole list.
Yeah.
And anything you could bring by the church would be very, very much appreciated. And you know where it's going.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. They could really use our help.
They need our help.
Father Ivan Masaryk, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it. In studio right now, retired Air Force Master Sergeant, retired police detective, who has his most dangerous assignment.
right now.
Stay next to me.
He is a substitute teacher.
Oh, wow.
Michael DeGrego, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Mr. D, the substitute teacher.
Yo, Mr.
Woo!
D. Nice.
Well, do you think that this is being a substitute teacher tougher than being a master sergeant or a police detective?
No.
No.
Oh. Good.
Okay.
No.
Good. It's a different time, though, for teachers.
Yeah.
But before you got into teaching and all of this, you were in the Air Force and you were speaking on international affairs.
Correct.
Which included Russia.
Right.
What's your thought on this, and then we'll move on?
Well, we have a containment policy that we've had in since the Cold War started, and we've made friends with all the countries that surround Russia, including Iraq, Iran, Greece, Turkey, India, Vietnam, and the European nations on the other side of the Iron Curtain. And it was a containment policy that I used to explain to the new recruits coming in on what our mission was and still is. And they all said to me, Mike, Sarge, why don't you become a teacher? You're great at it, better than any history teacher I've ever had. And so I went back to school, and I got a master's degree. And
good
I got
for you.
Certified.
No.
Master's. Not easy.
No.
Well.
No.
But yeah,
it's not that easy. I see you looking at me.
Right. Well, she had to draw the leprechaun.
Just don't touch any radioactive rocks, okay?
Exactly. There's your brain trust right there.
Good for you. How old were you going for your master's?
I started in 1989. Then I got activated for Desert Shield.
Are you a pilot?
No, I was a supply sergeant.
Isn't it interesting when I hear, like, I think everyone does this when they hear Air Force, they think, oh, you're a pilot.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There's so many other positions.
Right.
Yeah.
But lest they forget, an airplane is but thousands of spare parts.
But his ringtone's Danger Zone, by the way, just so you know.
So you were there for Operation Desert Shield? Were you over there?
I was in Stewart Air Force Base in Newburgh. We had 11 planes that were constantly going over to Saudi Arabia to bring supplies. It was called the C-5 Galaxy. It's the largest plane in the free world.
Wow.
Damn. Yeah. The largest plane in the free world.
It's 263 feet long, 243 feet wide at the wings.
243 feet wide.
Wide.
Right. Cup holder. Yep.
How much stuff can you put on that? I think Jennifer would be able to bring her clothes for a weekend vacation.
Perhaps.
Just a weekend.
Most of them.
We go to Mohegan Sun, and like we're rolling in stuff. They're like, how long are you staying here?
Right.
Like one night.
Right, stove night.
It depends on the mood, you know?
But what do you, what can you bring in that? All kinds of stuff.
Well, I'll give you the high points. You can load 9 Apache helicopters.
Wow.
12 Bradleys and 2. It can fit 2 M1 Abrams tanks,
wow,
which are tremendous.
Damn.
Whoa.
Yeah. That gets off the ground somehow.
And it gets off the ground stays off the ground until you want it to come down.
I have a whopper. I sit in the chair for 5 hours. I'm not getting up at all.
Man, that's something else. And Operation Desert Shield was when we were just bombing everything over, weakening the targets in Kuwait before we went over, right?
We were getting ready. We were a massive amount. Everybody was getting ready. Everybody was getting activated. All the medical personnel around the country were activated and all the National Guard units to be on alert. And then we gave an ultimatum. We gave them 90 days, I think, to stand down.
Get out of Kuwait.
Kuwait. And then when they didn't, January 17th, the desert storm started.
Make it rain.
So first it was, it felt like days, if not weeks, of just air missions softening all the targets. And then Operation Desert Storm was the ground part of that, right?
Right. Right.
And the scary thing about that is we thought Saddam Hussein had chemical weapons and would use them on our troops and the population.
Right.
Yeah. It was scary.
Yeah. I've been training for chemical warfare since the mid-'80s in our unit because we saw what happened in the Iraq-Iranian war and what they were using on each other.
Right.
And so we were being prepared, which means we
it's
had
a scary
wear,
thing.
We had to wear a full outfit. Right. We had atropine on us in case we were contaminated. We would have a spike and go right in our thigh. Like if I saw you fibrillating, I would have to pull out your spike, which was attached to your pant leg, and stab you in the thigh with it because it was a serum. It was the antidote.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm like, ouch.
Really?
Yeah.
That is. Can you imagine?
Was that
this
the war?
What our troops were being trained for.
Yeah. Was that the war that had the Scud missile back then?
Yeah.
The one you, like, you fired the trunk of your car and watched CNN to find out where it landed?
Yeah. That's why we had the Patriot missile.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they were... Iraq was firing missiles into Israel.
Right.
Just to get Israel involved because they knew that would draw the whole region into
a
conflict.
Yeah.
And we were unlucky. How do you think this one's going to play out with Russia?
It's
no
hard
one can
to
really
say.
You don't know.
It's hard to say because they were part of the USSR. And you know,
he wants it back.
If they were in NATO, it would have been a different story.
Yeah.
But everybody wants a flex.
Yeah. It's a tough one.
Yep.
Yeah. Right, especially now. It's going to be hard for him to go back and still save face.
Yeah.
That correct. Maybe you maybe would have been able to negotiate that a couple of years ago.
What if we write
Now it's kind of tough.
What if we write him an excuse? There you go. You told them this happened.
Yeah, yeah. Were you a detective before Master Sergeant in the Air Force or after you?
I got promoted. I was after. I was a detective. I got made detective in about... I was put in the detective bureau in the right after I came home, came back from active duty with the Desert Storm.
Nice.
And then
went right to detective, not police.
No, I was a police officer in 77.
Oh,
see,
wow.
See, I was in a National Guard unit.
Okay.
In the Air Force because I wanted to stay in. And I got promoted in 1988 to Master Sergeant.
Nice.
And then I was in patrol and then... I had gone to Iona College at 6 years at night with the fortitude that I wanted to get a degree. And I working around the clock. I would get off at 8 o'clock in the morning and go to class or get out of class and go to work at 4 o'clock. I did that for 6 years.
Wow.
Man.
And the thing was, my father, he couldn't believe that he got in the mail that I was on the dean's list. And he said, this, what happened?
This has to be wrong.
Yeah.
Well, you always called me genius, Dad.
You got the wrong
genius.
Michael DeGrego.
That's what he said.
Way to go, genius. I got that a lot, too.
When you were a detective, they called you Quincy. Why?
Because I was assigned to the Criminals Investigation Unit, CIU.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Whenever they had to, I always wore a white lab coat that said Detective DeGrego on it. And I wear that today when I teach it. At the schools when I teach science, I usually wear that.
Nice.
And when I went on, like they would say, get Quincy here, meaning I had to lift fingerprints. I was also the photographer.
Wow.
When it was...
you did multiple things.
Right.
Now they'll have a person just to take pictures.
Right.
Fingerprint specialist.
Right. But it was the old-fashioned that had to go through a developer, the rinse.
Oh.
You know what I mean? It was the old 8x10 glossies. We weren't allowed to use digital because then you could Photoshop people in the crime scene.
Yeah. One of the matte finishes.
Well, it makes it easier, though, right? You
get,
Photoshop them, man.
These kids today.
There's OJ taking his gloves off. Okay, we're done here.
That's it.
Yeah. Talk about some of, like, is there a case that you're really proud of? Like, everyone was going in one direction, and here comes Quincy, and...
Well, yes, there was one. It took place in 1999, and I'll tell you why it's historic. Because a woman was murdered, can I say that?
Yeah.
In 1979, and it was a cold case, and we were the first department in New York to solve a case using DNA.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
It was. And Governor Pataki himself came down and did a photo shoot with us, honoring us for all the hard work we did.
Wow.
That's incredible.
He stood in front, but.
Yeah, of course he did.
My guys over here did this.
They do that. They do that. They had nothing to do with anything, but right. Let me come down and take the picture, right. And I'm going to stand right in front.
Yep.
Well, what he did was he established a blood bank in the prisons. So anybody that got arrested for a felony automatically had to give their blood to the blood bank so we could solve a lot of cases.
Wow.
Well, yeah.
That's smart.
Yeah.
Okay. So did you have to argue to have that evidence submitted?
No, it was clear cut. It was pretty clear cut.
So it was established.
Yeah.
This is good science.
Yeah.
And so you put all these prisoners in the DNA database, and then you run it against all this. So you start running all your cold cases into the database.
Unsolved.
And it's like bing, 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 bing. You start getting hits.
Correct.
Well,
wow.
Yeah.
And it was this guy, so he was already in prison for another.
Correct. He was upstate in Dannemora.
For another murder or
another crime.
Well,
and then.
Lovely place to stay, by the way.
Jeez. Yeah. You know, I always, when you watch Quincy.
Well, he did everything.
He was a medical guy, right? Examiner?
Medical examiner, yes. ME.
Right. He was the ME, but he was solving cases.
Right.
Correct.
Car chases, eating a sandwich while looking at someone's dead body.
Well, there was always.
That was the worst part. I'm like, but you eat a sandwich.
No, they do that a lot. And I think it's to show the viewer that being around dead bodies is normal.
Desensitized
people.
Now.
Yeah. They could just have a sandwich.
Yeah, right. I need
standing over a dead body.
I need a different ambiance, but thank you. Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm not going to eat here.
That's the first thing they did was call me. This is before cell phones. I used to have a beeper.
Oh.
And we have a body, and I have to go down and take photographs.
So that was your thing? Photographs, fingerprints?
Fingerprints, dusting for prints, collecting evidence. That's what we were doing, collecting evidence. Then we had to do a criminal background. Like if somebody came in, we had to make sure that they weren't wanted somewhere in California. We had to do a background check on everybody
a lot harder
that was arrested.
Like you had to really work it.
Is that why you grabbed my number earlier?
Now, now everything's on a computer.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
That OJ case and that JonBenet Ramsey case really changed how investigators approach a scene and
because who gets just, in? How many? Yeah.
People are just walking around, touching stuff, moving stuff.
Oh. Yeah, that's right. Well, if you ever see that movie, can I talk about a movie?
Oh, yeah.
Sea of Love with Al Pacino.
Okay, yeah.
That was Sea of Love. When he walked into the scene and he saw all the cigarettes in the ashtray because the guys watching this crime scene were putting their own cigarettes out. That was the most realistic crime scene movie.
Oh, really?
Good.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
what are you doing over here?
Really?
Yeah.
Really,
he shouts all his dialogue.
He nailed it. In fact,
and what year was that movie?
Sea of Love,
90s.
Okay,
I think.
And your attack in the background. We'll know in a second.
You have to watch.
You have the Phil 2000 on it.
I'm looking.
Yes,
89 looks like.
1989.
I heard of it. I remember that.
Yeah.
But the guys used to make a little joke with me because I was also became the warrant officer. And I used to mail business letters in and out to people that I learned from working in a bank. And I used to get people to come in and surrender without even leaving the building.
Detective.
So the other detectives used to go, "What'd you do? Promise them Yankee tickets?" Because in Sea of Love, in the beginning scene, Al Pacino sent out all these guys that had warrants. "We got Yankee tickets for you."
Right.
When they all came in.
Like a sting operation. Yeah. "Hey, look, I won a boat."
Right. What was your connection to Ground Zero? You were there during the building of the building.
Yeah. I'll tell you, a buddy, I worked for Franciscan Missions, and my boss had a part-time job He had a job at the Ground Zero. So he says to me, "Come on, we'll go down. We'll go to my site, and then we'll have a couple of drinks, and then we'll come home, you know, a night in New York City." So I said, "Okay." So I went with him, and we enter the building, and we can only go to the 25th floor.
Hmm.
I said, "What do we do now?" "Oh, we got to walk up to the 90th.
Wow. God.
So,
because that's as far as the elevator would go.
Right. So I'm 19. And he's like, okay. So we're walking up. Every floor there was a guy with a little TV watching a Met game or a Yankee game. And I go, oh, these are security guards. We're walking up. We'll walk. All of a sudden, there's no more walls.
Oops.
It's like outdoors.
Right.
All you hear is the wind.
Oh, wow.
I had to walk up another 20 floors hanging onto the hand.
Oh, yeah. God.
At that point, I'm going downstairs.
Scary.
Yeah, I'm going downstairs.
Scary.
Yeah.
I'm like, where are we going? We only got 10 more floors to go. Come on. So we go
only
up.
Like mountain climbing now. Yeah.
Wow.
I just passed a goat.
And it's screaming at me.
What the hell are we, Everest?
Hawks are below us now.
There's a guy up there with two tablets.
A bird just poked on me.
A burning bush.
Right. All these folks with harps. What's going on with that?
Oh, man.
Yeah, so it was scary.
Wow.
So we get up there. And he flips a switch, and a fan goes on.
Need more wind, right?
So this fan goes on. So he goes, okay, that's it. I go, what? He goes, yeah, that's my job. I said, you're getting paid all night for that? He goes, yeah. And we left.
Wow. It's a great job.
It is, and
what is the fan for?
The commute sucked.
It had to go on.
Okay.
So I said, wait a minute. Don't you have to come back and shut that fan off? Oh, that's another guy's job.
Wow. Wow. See, we're at jobs like that from now on.
Yeah. Not what I'm paid for.
Yeah. Well, why? Where are those jobs?
I don't know.
Wow.
Back in the 70s.
What happens if it doesn't go on?
Then somebody else shows up.
That's a long
it.
Day.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And then did you end up... responding to that or being a part of that?
Yes, I did. Yeah. It sort of like changed my whole demeanor on destruction and warfare. Seeing it. What happened was I think six people were rescued. They were buried alive. And so the following day or the other day, after Mayor Giuliani had finally got control after the towers collapsed, he got control to do more rescue work efforts. So I went down with about 30 guys in a van, and kids from middle school were all throwing gloves in our cars. We're driving down the West Side Drive. They're giving us goggles, respirators, and things. And we were only allowed to go as far as the Senator Jacob Javits Center. And that was it.
Yeah. Then staging you had area, right?
Then you had to walk.
Yeah.
It looked like Macy's outside. Clothing stores. Yeah. I mean, there was so much clothes that were donated on racks.
Wow.
Wow.
But we went right. We walked to the site. But as soon as we got on the when we were getting off the bus, I'm looking down the 3 miles that I have to walk. And the sight I saw, black, purples, yellow, primary colors in the sky of all the pollution and stuff that was in the air.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm saying to myself, now I just was trained. 3 years earlier for
chemical warfare.
Chemical warfare.
You're looking at this.
I put my respirator on right away.
Now's a good time to slap it on.
And my helmet.
Yeah.
And the other guys were going, what are you doing? And I said,
put it on.
I'm telling you, put it on.
Follow my lead, yeah.
Because you know what's down there is also up here. So my partner, he was from India, my partner Arnie goes, cuz, what are you doing? And I said, Arnie, you were in the Army Guard. What did they tell you about chemical warfare? And he put his right on.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so.
No questions. Yeah.
But when we got there, there were about 700 guys in front of us online to go through a tent to show your ID because they were only taking police and firemen as rescue workers because they were already vetted.
Yeah.
They couldn't have time to fingerprint people. So you showed your ID. That was over an hour to get in that tent. Then you went to the second tent where they did a background check on you. Then you went to a third tent, and the third tent is where they gave you this laminated card, City of New York, and it's got my number on it, and it says Mayor's Office of Emergency Management, World Trade Center Emergency. If you walked out that third tent without this on, you were going to get shot.
Ooh.
They were not playing because they expected more terrorism.
Okay. Right?
When I got through that tent, what I'm about to tell you, I couldn't believe. It was like snowplow trucks went through all this rubble and made a clearing, like a boulevard clearing. And I was walking amongst cement that was piled 2-3 stories high.
Oh.
And we had to go through a maze. And when I got to the maze, all I saw was thousands and thousands of guys working the same as me. You couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman. We all had the respirators on with our helmets.
Thank God.
And 4 stories up on top of the rubble with all this purple smoke swirling around, the fire department, it was about 9 o'clock at night. They made it look like daytime. So it looked like it was 8 o'clock in the morning. We were all working, but they were firemen 5 stories high. They were acting like symphonies conductors, just doing with their hands, telling you what to move, where to go. And I was on a bucket brigade. And what we did was, say, Chaz, you were on one end, and there's like 200 guys you're passing the empty buckets to, and AJ's filling the stuff up with debris. Then we all turn around and pass the full buckets to you, and you dump them.
Oh, wow.
And we were doing, and there was about 15 lines like that with 200-300 guys on each line.
Wow, man.
And I didn't stop working until 12 o'clock the next day. I just kept working. I'm sorry.
Thank you for that.
No, thank you.
Yeah. No, thank you for everything you've done for us.
Yes.
Yeah. We don't deserve people like you.
No.
But we're glad you exist.
But we're glad to have you.
Yes. Happy. Thank you.
We got to have you back to talk about being a substitute teacher.
All right.
Because on behalf of some of the, you know, wacky kids, I just want to apologize.
He was killed the spitball.
I was one of those kids. Yeah. Michael DeGrego, a.k.a. Mr. D, substitute teacher. Thanks for coming in. Thank you for your service to the military and the police. And
thanks for everything, really.
Thank you for everything.
George Thorogood!
Don't laugh about me. You know how sensitive I am.
Of course not. No, we're laughing at me, actually.
You're bad to the bone.
Exactly.
You're the opposite of sensitive.
Can you write a song about traffic? That'd be awesome.
The traffic from Boston to Washington, D.C. is no picnic.
Oh, yeah.
Are you ever going to get the Connecticut Turnpike, the construction finished there?
No.
I've been traveling that route from 1974 right up to now.
Oh, wow.
And we're out there at night stuck in that place, and they're still working on the Connecticut Turnpike. I said, why don't you just close the thing down for 2 months, get it done, and get it done once and for all?
Well,
you know, I think it's probably because it's traveled so much, they don't have the time to keep up,
right.
You know?
I got to tell you, we're going to talk to the governor. And I'm going to say
good.
George Thorogood said.
Fix this stuff, man.
Yeah.
Our governor's a big fan of music.
Exactly.
We are, I just want to say, we are big fans. It's an honor to talk to you. I remember when your first album came out, I went out and bought it, and I just loved it from beginning to end. You know, 1977, when your first album came out, that was not a quiet year for rock music. That was a tough year to come out.
Right, to stand out like that, though.
I'm glad you didn't tell me that then.
Yeah, exactly. You didn't want to know that then.
We wanted to keep it a secret.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't tell me something's impossible until after I've done it.
Exactly right.
We're excited that you're playing Bridgeport. You've played Connecticut many, many times. The Hartford Healthcare Amphitheater in Bridgeport is a brand new state-of-the-art facility.
Oh, my God, you'll love it.
It is. You're going to be backstage, and you're going to say, I've never seen anything so nice before.
Well, that's wonderful. And it's wonderful. It's nice. I don't know how wonderful it's going to be after we played there.
Right.
I don't know how nice. Nice takes a long time for me to get adjusted to.
Right. And the good part is the road is all fixed over there, so it's good.
Oh, it's a brand new facility. The show that you're playing on June 10th, is called the Chaz and AJ Barbecue. And we haven't figured out
the barbecue part
yet, but we thought if we get George Thorogood and the Delaware Destroyers and Sammy Hagar to play, people will show up.
Exactly.
You know, we're always throwing it on the table. The world has expanded their horizons on acts, as we have. Sammy's been after my butt for a long time.
In a good way.
He's been chasing my act.
Okay,
for
cool.
A while. Okay, that's
did you guys know each other before he was in Van Halen? I'm guessing yes.
No, I didn't know him then.
Oh, really?
I never even knew he was with Sam Hale. Sam Hale, what am I saying? I never knew he was with them. I thought I just knew him as a solo artist.
Oh.
But yeah, so working with Sammy is going to be fantastic. We've been, you know, trying to, you know, get our heads together and do this. This has been a work in progress. This just didn't come out of nowhere. our people and the great Sammy Hagar, we've been wanting to do this for a while. It just took a matter of time to get it together.
You know, people, when they go to a concert, George, I know you know because I've seen your set list. I mean, you play the music people want to hear, you know. And there's going to be a lot of familiar songs played
seriously
that night between you and Sammy.
Let's hope so. That was the reason we made records to begin with. Jeff Simon and myself, and then later Blau, when we put together our act, or we were trying to, our audience, they always have dictated to us what it is they want. So every time we went in the studio, I said, let's not think so much of expanding our popularity. Let's keep the people who already dig us in our corner.
Right.
Meaning we'd record a song and say, well, what was behind the song you did or you wrote or you wanted to do? I said, because I knew our fans would dig it. I mean, that's what it's all about for me anyway.
Well, you know what I like? I love your writing, but I also love your selection of cover songs that, you know, the songs that you picked to cover are really unique.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
What's your point?
Well, I just think it's the songs that you cover are cool. Like, Ride on Josephine, not everyone would do that. Like, everyone has done Chuck Berry covers, but mm-hmm. You find songs that not everyone would cover.
Well, not only, where the thing was most of those artists didn't even know these songs existed.
Right.
Including the artists themselves. Now, by the time we came along, we'd look at all the records put out and we'd go, what hasn't been done that Bo Diddley has done? I'd say, what's left in the vault?
Right.
And, you know, those artists have been well picked over. So it took us a while to say, you know, and that's what got people kind of interested. Said, oh, I've been a Chuck Berry fan, but I've never heard this song.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I like Bo Diddley. I've never heard this one.
Yeah.
Well, that was me doing incredible, I won't say painstaking, it was a labor of love, doing the research to say, we can't do this song. It's on the Live Jefferson Airplane album. It's already done.
Yeah.
It's already known.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's where we emerged. We got our head above water and got people's attention.
We're talking to George Thorogood. He's going to be performing with Sammy Hagar in the Circle at the Hartford Healthcare Amphitheater Friday, June 10th. Tickets are on sale now. You've played Toad's Place so many times, I don't even know if we have a number on that. But Toad's Place was stop number 31 on your 50-50 tour. Talk about that tour. What was the idea behind that? 50 shows, 50 nights.
The idea behind that was a bad idea. we had a guy working for it who was our driver at the time, and he said, why don't you do a tour when you play all the states? You're just so picky about that. And I said, oh, yeah, that's interesting. So we brought that idea up, and our booking agent put it together. And about the third gig into it, our driver said, you know, I think it's really fantastic. And I said, what? And he said, that you're going to play all 50 nights, 50 states in 50 days and no nights off and do it. And I said, yeah. Well, you're the one brought the idea up.
Yep.
And he said, well, no, I just meant to play them. I didn't mean do them all, you know, all in a row.
Oops.
I went, what? Wait, couldn't you have been more specific 6 months ago?
Yeah, you left that part out a bit.
And
yeah,
there was things coming along that we were already booked. And,
oops.
You know, Bill Graham wanted us to play in Madison Square Garden with the Rolling Stones. So I said, I was thinking, well, where were you 6 months ago? I already got this thing booked. Yeah, we sent a few shockwaves to the industry that George stuck to his guns and he didn't kneel to the rock system and he said no to Bill Graham and the Rolling Stones. Rah, 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 rah. This isn't a matter of anything. It's a matter of contract.
Obligation.
Exactly.
You're a man of your word.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, we did it and it's done. So I'm ready to go back to Toad's Place.
That was such a great venue. You're going to love this Hartford Healthcare Amphitheater,
seriously,
too.
You
really, really are. It's outside, but there's a giant tent, so the weather is not a factor, but you got the
huge stage,
the summer air, and it's outside, and everybody's going to be really excited for a fun night out.
I hate to break up this little Valentine, fellas. is Scorsese still calling today?
I got to find them on hold.
And Nicholson, too?
Right.
Oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do with these guys?
You can just say you got to go.
It's a little slice of heaven, but I got to go back to work.
I hear you.
Okay. Yeah, well, thanks for coming on, and we look forward to seeing you at the Hartford Healthcare Amphitheater in June.
Rock and roll never sleeps. It just passes out. Adios.
This was the Jazz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now, and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Jazz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.